I respectfully acknowledge the people of the Yugambeh language region, the traditional owners of the land on which this podcast is recorded, and pay my respects to their elders past and present, and all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples here today.
Hello, guys, and welcome to Miss Inclusivity, the podcast. My name is Bridget, your host, as always. And today we are joined by the lovely Amy, and some of you may know her as Miss T. Welcome, Miss T.
Thank you for having me. Very excited.
I'm very excited to have you. But we always start every single podcast with the exact same question, and I'm super excited to hear this. What made you want to be a teacher?
So my story is, I guess all the stories on your podcast are completely different from each other. But for me, I actually didn't want to become a teacher. I have grown up in a family of teachers. So I'm a third generation teacher. And from a young age, I was always told she's going to become a teacher. She'll end up teaching. Yep. And, you know, natural rebellious side of any teenager. They go, no, I want to do the exact opposite to what everyone's telling me to do. So I went to uni, did a year of international studies, and I just realized it wasn't for me. So I switched over, did high school teaching, and never looked back.
That's amazing. It's perfect. It's crazy how the world just turns out that way, because you just came from a line of teachers. So you're just surrounded by positive, you know, reinforcement for it too. That's amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So everyone in my family, they're all primary school. They actually all have different specializations. So my mum's in library. My grandma was in disability support and special education and all that kind of thing. So yeah, it's really cool. That's that we lovely. All have different degrees. Yeah.
I love that. And what would you say has been the highlight of your teaching career so far?
So this is really hard. There's been so many highlights. I originally was going to say getting the job that I have this year, but I think the moment I'm most proud of is last year I was given the opportunity to be the year 11 year advisor at my school, and I absolutely loved it. It sucked that it was online learning and it wasn't what it was meant to be. You know, you got to roll with it.
Yep.
But definitely becoming a year advisor, I was still studying at uni. I still wasn't fully qualified. I was on a 3-day a week contract, and yet I was year advisor. So it was great.
That's really cool. So you were in your final year of your degree. Is that right?
Yes. So I had done my undergrad and I was in my final year of my master's when I, they call it, you know, your conditional teaching approval or your casual number, where most uni students will just do casual days here and there or do, you know, 1 week blocks. But I was lucky enough to get a contract for the whole year.
That's amazing. Yeah. See, that's in Queensland. That's the only way that you're able to teach in your final year. So you have to get permission to teach, and then you have to be offered a contract. So for New South Wales, you guys can casually teach in your final year, but what the opportunity that you got is basically all that we can get in Queensland, which is just wild to think.
That blows my mind. Yeah. Because we need the fourth year uni students or last year uni students in their last year need to get into schools and start learning, because you learn more on the job than you do at uni.
Oh gosh, yeah. And then you get great opportunities as well, because more opportunities come into light instead of relying purely just on an interview after you graduate, whereas you ended up being a year 11 year coordinator or year advisor, same sort of thing?
Yeah, same sort of thing. They called it year advisor where I live, but same thing.
That's amazing. Year 11 as well. They're literally like young adults.
Yes, definitely. But we're getting excited for all the year 12 events. I ended up moving schools at the end of last year, so that was a bit disappointing that I couldn't see them through to year 12, but definitely those senior events are a lot of fun.
Oh, well, that might lead on to the next question then. What has been one of the challenges of your teaching career so far?
This same cohort, year 11. Yep. last year I taught a subject that was very new to me. It was, we call it English studies.
Yep.
It's a lower grade of English where you don't have to necessarily get an ATAR. You can, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
And I'm a language teacher as my primary teaching area. So with my pracs, I was used to students choosing my subject because they loved it and they were passionate about it and they wanted to work hard at it. And then I went into this English studies course where it's, you know, everyone in New South Wales has to study English until they leave school.
Yeah.
So the students in this class, just they didn't want to be at school. They didn't want to learn. And the behavior was really, really hard.
Yeah.
So term one, I just had no idea what to do. It was complete trial and error. I didn't know. I kept questioning myself. And was it because I was young? Was it because I was, you know, a female teacher? Would they respond differently if they had a male teacher? But by the end of the first term, I guess a few of the kids who really didn't want to be at school had left and gotten apprenticeships or full-time jobs. And the kids that were left were incredible. We built this really, really awesome rapport where I felt like they came into English and they just were more relaxed. They weren't always on the defensive side, which I feel like they were in a lot of other subjects. So it was a challenge, but it ended up being my favorite class. I mean, I know we're not meant to have favorites, but it was my favorite class by the end of the year.
Yeah, wow, I love that. Awesome. Well, what would you say is one of your number one advice that you could give to some other teachers becoming a high school teacher? So like you've just explained, you know, there are some different challenges and behavior management is totally different in high school settings as it is to primary school settings is what I'm used to. So you went through a whole term of tackling challenging behaviors. What is some advice that you would give to, you know, some of these pre-service teachers that are maybe listening to this podcast to tackle those sorts of things?
The biggest thing for me is at the beginning of the year, I kind of almost put content on the back foot and really, really focus on building a relationship with my students. I try and identify the students who I know are going to be really hard work and figure out what they're interested in. If they love fishing, are they into, you know, footy or motorbike riding or whatever they're into, and try and kind of make little comments here and there about what they're into. And I feel like that goes a really long way in terms of building rapport. For me, I made the mistake, but my first prac, as I said, was in languages, so everyone wanted to be there. And my second prac was at an academically selective high school, so there was no behaviour issues whatsoever. So going into a normal, I guess, setting, normal school setting, it was really, really hard with behaviour. So my advice would be to, while you're on prac, try to go into different subjects, try to go into all different cohorts. I know some pre-service teachers that I've spoken to have been put on juniors, just 7 to 10, and haven't been put in any senior classes. So try and ask, you know, even if you go into a completely different subject, you don't have to sit there and learn the content, but you can just see and watch how other teachers manage those really tricky behaviours and the attitude and the hormones and all of those things that come along, especially with the older ones.
Yeah, gosh, yeah. It's a totally different ball game in high school. Like, and I think the grade fives and sixes in primary school is difficult. I couldn't even imagine dealing with like grade 11 and 12s where they're driving and going to parties and stuff. It's just, oh my gosh, totally different.
I couldn't imagine being a primary school teacher. I don't know how you do it either. So I guess everyone's built differently. We're all made for a different setting.
That's it. 100%. I was talking to one of the parents after she was picking up one of her kids from holiday club, so vacation care, whatever anybody calls it. And this girl was adamant that she had to get her, do you know the iron-on beads? She was like, she had to get that done before she left for the day. So the mum was just standing there chatting to me. She's just like, and some of the boys were coming up and they're like, bah, 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 Miss Bridget, just like yelling. And she's like, how do you do this? Like, she's like, what are you doing? I'm just like, I don't know. I love it. It just keeps me going.
Absolutely. You totally get used to it, and you learn to tune the parts that are, I guess, on the outside to a lot of people frustrating, where to us they're not frustrating because we just are so desensitized to things like that.
So used to it. So much used to just dealing with the younger people. Whereas my partner, who's a nurse, is like dealing with like totally different realm of things. And we both just come home after a day and we both just like vice versa. How do you do that? How do you do these things? It's so wild. I love it so much. How do you find completing assessments for so many students? Because I'd love to know how many students you deal with and the marking and all those sorts of things. Walk us through it.
So generally speaking, it really depends on what subject you teach, but a subject like English, for example, where it's quite a bigger, I guess, content load, you've got 5 classes generally. Again, it depends on period allocations and all of that, but generally you have 5 classes, roughly 30 kids in each class. So you're looking at about 150 students. For me, it's a little bit less this year because I did get beginning teacher time, which is amazing.
That's good.
And then, you know, I've got roll call kids as well. So with that, I don't have any marking to do. But marking in my faculties is massive. It is the by far the hardest part of the job. It is so draining and just emotionally really, really hard. I try to know, I'm really lucky in the sense that the faculties I've been in have had a head teacher who is quite organized, and they will allocate who is marking what when a year in advance. So you know, okay, term three, between this date and this date, I'm going to be smashed with marking. And it's just trial and error to see what works for you. This term, I was really procrastinating. I was marking year eight creative writing, and some of them were just not the level I would like.
Yep.
I created myself a little marking schedule of this is how many papers I need to do per day. And I looked at my school timetable and went, okay, well, these are the days I'm really busy, so I'm going to mark a few less. And then these are the days that I'm got a bit more time, so I'm going to mark as many as I can. And that way I could get it done within the 2 weeks without feeling like I lost weekends.
Yeah, because organization is key.
Absolutely. You just go back on a Monday after a weekend of marking and you feel so drained and you're like, it's only Monday.
Yeah. So do you not take it, the marking home?
I try not to.
I love that.
It's those two things. You talk to some teachers and they're like, biggest piece of advice, never take marking home, keep it at school, keep that work-life balance and those boundaries. But then it's also when you're sitting in a staff room and you've got kids coming and going and teachers coming and going, it's really hard to sit and concentrate.
Yeah.
I love to be able to sit outside on some of the like outdoor tables, but with this rain, haven't been able to do that. So it's a fine balance. I'm trying my best to do as many at school as I can, sticking to the marking schedule and going, okay, well, I only have five left to do today. So I'm going to take those five home and do them tonight, but trying my best to do them as much at school as possible.
And as long as you don't get them done, like get any that you have to do over the weekend. So you get them all done by what, like Friday afternoon, and then you're like, nope, that's it. I'm not going to do it on the weekend. Because like you said, you'd just be tired by Monday. It's just, it's like a groundhog day, really. It's just like the same thing over and over again. Wow. You mentioned before that you do a lot of languages and stuff like that. So what made you want to choose the subjects that you wanted to teach in high school?
So I am a language teacher as my primary. The way I did my degree is you had to choose a primary and then choose an additional. So I chose Indonesian language as my primary, and then my additional was meant to be just HSIE, which I specialize in society and culture. Because of the undergrad I did, it kind of tied in really well. Wow. But then I kind of did a bit of digging, and I don't think a lot of people know this, but with my university, I was able to basically swap out all of my electives in my master's degree for another teaching area so I could have three instead of the normal two.
Yeah.
And I had English on instead of doing these random electives. I figured it was better to have a subject that was nice and broad. So I did English as well. And the reason I kind of chose those areas, English I chose to get a job because it's every school, you know, all over the country. But my dream is to get into languages as much as I can. So my Indonesian teacher, who still works at the high school I went to, I did my first prac with her. She's absolutely incredible, kind of aspire to be. And, yeah, that's my dream job. My goal job is to be full-time language teacher.
Wow. So and to hopefully teach Indonesian. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. So
I want to maybe one day work at, a lot of schools do two languages or sometimes even three. So as a language teacher, you might teach, you know, primarily Indonesian, but then a period or two of French or Spanish or of Italian, and at a year seven level. So you've got to kind of teach yourself, but hopefully one day primarily Indonesian language. Yes.
Wow. That's amazing. So yeah, so you'll have to do two languages. So basically you kind of, it's not that you have to be fluent in your second language that you want to teach as such. You've kind of got to know the basics. Is that right?
Yeah. So normally, I mean, it depends on timetabling. That's the biggest challenge. So if, you know, there's a year seven French class that needs a teacher at that time and the French teacher is teaching, the priority goes to seniors. So if a French teacher is teaching year 12 and can't, you know, obviously do the two at the same time, they might get the Indonesian teacher to just do that one-off year seven period of French in the fortnight. So that might even, between, you know, it's same as job sharing, you might make that the culture lesson. So the Indonesian teacher would just be teaching culture rather than language, or there might be, you know, more practical hands-on research type activities that you did in that one period. So for me, I wouldn't have to learn, you know, fluent French to be able to do that role. It would just be, you know, the basics.
Wow. So in Sydney, is there like a, I mean, I'm only guessing here because I'm basing off what I, because I grew up and in Sydney and did half of my high school in New South Wales, and we were taught Italian, which I loved it. I loved learning Italian because it's more, it's like one of those languages that basically if you learn it, then you can learn other languages like Spanish and all those sorts of things because they all derive from the same thing. I feel like in New South Wales, there's more of a language offering. In Queensland, it's basically like Japanese or nothing. That's basically it. And Japanese is such, I know, and it's such a niche language. Like it's literally only used in Japan. It would make sense for Queenslanders to learn, say, like I was saying, like Spanish or French or something like that. But in New South Wales, is it am I right in saying that there's more language offerings available?
Yeah, there definitely is. We're really lucky in the sense that we have a really good distance education program. So if you're in year 11 and 12 and you want to study a subject, a language that is not offered at your school, you can do it by distance education.
Wow.
Kind of like online learning for that one subject. So instead of when everyone else is going off to PE or to, you know, food tech, you go off to the library or a study space and you do your learning for that language online. But yes, our schools are really lucky. A lot of our language jobs are offered just as a language job, and then you bring the language that you speak to the school. Some schools will be like, we want an Italian teacher, or we want a French teacher, or we want a German teacher. But a lot of schools just want a language teacher, and they don't mind what language you bring to the table.
That's so cool. I love that idea. See, in Queensland, like majority, it's like all state schools obviously are really pushing for the Japanese front. There are some, you know, private schools as such, and they do like a random German and French class, but there'll probably only be like 10 kids in the class. And Queenslanders are just more pushed to do like PE and stuff. Like for me, I did two PE classes in grade 12. But I feel like for such a niche language to be such a primary like subject for students to choose, I'm watching my primary school kids going through primary school. It's very cool to see, obviously, these kids that will get to grade two and they know all the colours, all the numbers, the whole alphabet in Japanese. It's great, but I'd love to see it in a different sort of language, sort even like Indigenous. Like imagine if that was the subject, because in Queensland we have such a rich Indigenous culture and we have so many different lands and everything that everybody needs to learn. Imagine if each school taught the Indigenous language of the country that they learn on.
Oh, it'd be amazing. And you just think of it too, long term, you've got so much more diversity in terms of the Australian population and so many more international connections because, you know, our population can connect with multiple different nations rather than just, you know, forcing upon a certain language. And it also becomes this problem too for languages anyway. I was really lucky at the school that I went to that languages were, you know, the dream subject. Everyone wanted to do it. But at a lot of schools, that's not the case. It's forced upon and no one likes to do it. They do their, you know, compulsory hours in year 7 or 8 and then that's it. They don't want to go anywhere near it.
Yeah, that was me. That was me. But it was Italian. I liked it. It was Italian for me when I was in New South Wales and it was good fun. And I still remember it to this day. Like when I went to and traveled through Europe, I still remembered some of it, and which is great to learn because that's something I'm going to use. But a lot of these students are now growing up and they're just like, oh, I'd love to go to Japan because I know Japanese. I'm just like, but if you grew up knowing Spanish, you could go to A, B, C, D, E, F, G, like all these different language, like all these different countries. Absolutely. But in saying that, what made you want to, so you wanted to do Indonesian because of your teacher, or is it because you like Indonesia as a whole? Like
a bit of both. I started Indonesian when I was in year 7, so like most high schoolers, and then I did it in year 8 and then chose it as an elective in year 9 and 10 and then did it by distance education in year 11 and 12 and then it became one of my majors at university, and I also majored in Asian studies, so it just kind of made sense and I just kept going with it and I love it. I really, really love it. I can't wait to get back to Indonesia. Let's Bali trip.
Teacher meet up. Gosh, we need to go to Bali. I'm like starting to see now that the borders are open and I'm starting to see people go and I'm like, wow. And I'm seeing now that like nobody's going anywhere near like Kuta and Legian. Like everybody's going to like Canggu and north now. And I'm just like, this is really interesting. I'm like, I need to go back and suss it all out again.
Absolutely. We got to do a big trip. I was actually meant to go in last year, the year before, and we booked it for, I think it was April of 2020.
And oh, so that's right when COVID hit.
No, that never happened. So
have you still got the credit though?
Yes, I've got credit, so I want to go back.
Oh my gosh, you need to book it for like maybe like end of year or something like that. But gosh, it'll be hot then, won't it?
It will be very hot.
It'll be very hot. Maybe I can meet you there. It's totally fine. We'll meet you at maybe not Potato Head because it's not popping off like it used to be anymore. What's one of the beach clubs in Canggu?
We never know. By then it might be. We can keep our fingers and toes crossed that it bounces back.
Absolutely. Oh gosh, man. And then you can teach me the Indonesian. You can teach me language. If I write it to you, you'll be able to tell me what they're all saying about me. I love it so much. I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Amy. But before we go, we do have a very special promotion for the listeners of the Miss Inclusivity podcast. Take it away for us, Miss T.
Yeah, so I own a little teacher business selling lanyards and whistles and things like that. And I just created a little sneaky discount code for all of Bridget's amazing followers on listeners. So it's podcast 10, all capitals. So podcast 10. And you get a little discount at checkout.
Beautiful. So you guys better grab on to Miss T's store. You can follow that all on her Instagram through the link in her bio. I'll put her Instagram in the show notes for you guys as well. So it'll be an easy way for you to go on there and use the cheeky discount code. Thank you so much for coming on, Miss T. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Bye guys.